Everybody, please. My name is Paul Scott, and we, as members of the Production Electric Vehicle Drivers Coalition, are glad that you all came. We have exciting news for you. Many of you have heard about the T-Zero and the expanded range lithium-ion batteries, and we have Alan Piccone and Tom Gage here to talk about that and answer questions. And prior to that, we want to talk about the legislative and regulatory issues surrounding EVs. As many of you know, the California Air Resources Board last April pretty much eviscerated the zero-emission vehicle mandate, and that shut down the electric vehicle production lines at GM and Toyota and Honda, which were pretty much going out anyway, but that was the death knell for them. And we are here to try to reconstruct the EV industry. And the way to do it is to support the small individual companies that are out there building these viable electric cars. Today we're going to talk about, right now we're going to talk about the regulatory issues surrounding them. CARB is still writing rules about the zero-emission vehicles. And this is Greg Hanton of the Production Electric Vehicle Drivers Coalition to tell you all about it. So, please welcome. Thank you.
As Paul said, my name is Greg Hanson. I'm with the Production EV Drivers Coalition. We started back in early 2000, actually late 99, to bring together the voices of the other EV drivers, EV1, Honda EV Plus, some very few Toyota RAV4 drivers because they weren't available to the public then, and Ford Ranger, a number of others, and speak on behalf of the drivers who were being drowned out by the automakers who were saying there was no demand for electric vehicles. So we got up in front of CARB, in front of the legislature, in front of the governor, in front of the press, and declared that, you know, we're here, we're using these vehicles, they work well, we want more, we have friends who want more. Of course, over the last 2 years, we've had some victories. Ultimately, we've had probably more defeats than victories. Everything looked like we were victorious back in 2001 when the CARB regulation went forward, and everyone was jubilant that things were moving forward. But then the GM lawsuits, actually Chrysler and GM lawsuits, brought everything to a screeching halt. And in the aftermath now, as Paul said, the regulations have been gutted to the point where most manufacturers either have enough credits from selling neighborhood vehicles or other various credits that they've banked up over the many years that they don't have to do anything for a while. Or they're going to take this new alternate compliance path that CARB is offering, which means if you build about a dozen fuel cell vehicles, we'll let you off the hook. You can build hybrids to fill in the rest of your requirements. Now, from CARB's perspective, this is all fine and dandy because they're getting hundreds of thousands of PZEVs, which are super clean gasoline cars. So from an air quality standpoint, at least in the short term, they're getting good bang for their buck. They're going to get a lot of clean cars on the road, and it's going to help clean the air in California, and that's great in the short term. Their long-term vision is still a big gamble on fuel cells. Those of us in the technical realm have a lot of questions about fuel cells. We don't see it taking off in quite the same speed that maybe CARB does. And in fact, the automakers don't either. Most of the automakers and most of the industry people are saying it's going to be another, you know, 15, 20 years. I don't think it'll ever happen myself. But, you know, ask me again in 2 years, 3 years. The main thing going on at CARB right now, our only glimmer of hope for some of these vehicles, many of which have been taken back from by the manufacturers at the end of their leases, is a release credit, which was proposed earlier this year and has been through a few changes. Unfortunately, we're still waiting for the final language because they bungled the language on the last 15-day notice that they put out. But what we expect to see any day now in this new language is a credit that I should say CARB used to have a credit for extended warranties, which was intended to keep vehicles on the road beyond 3 years with a warranty. They've dropped the requirement for a warranty, so now vehicles like the Honda EV Plus that have been on the road for more than 3 years and some of the Gen 1 EV1s that were put out for a two-year release will get some additional credits, but they're offering an even more juicy incentive for vehicles that starting this year, in 2003, I believe, and I have to see the final language, will get about 2.4 credits per vehicle per year that they're put out, which is pretty gracious considering a fuel cell vehicle is worth about 40 credits. to put it in perspective, it's a good number of credits, but it's unknown how many data makers really want the credits or need the credits at this point. One thing that was news to me, recently I talked with Chuck Schulock at ARB, who confirmed that not only will they get these credits for these vehicles if they're put out beyond 3 years, they will also be able to use it against their fuel cell requirement. So like I said before, they could meet the requirement with about a dozen fuel cell vehicles. If they release a number of EVs, older EVs, they can reduce their fuel cell requirement, which of course they're looking to do because the fuel cell vehicles cost somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million a pop. So we're working with the California legislature with the help of our lobbyist, Catherine Lynch, to send letters from the legislature to the individual OEMs saying, now that this gracious credit is out, and we're waiting for the final language there, will you put some of your older EVs back on the road, and is there anything we, the legislature, can do to help facilitate that? So we expect that to happen within the next week or two, and we have individual letters to GM and Honda and Toyota and all the others. I've heard that there's been early interest from Ford and Toyota to bring back some of their vehicles, which is good news for some of the older RAV4s. It's unknown whether they would release any of the old conductive RAV4s, but we're still holding out hope that some of the fleet small paddle vehicles in 2001 and maybe some of the large paddle vehicles from 2000 might see more life out there. Some of the things I've heard from some of the people in the utility industry say that Toyota's been willing to go out to 4 and 5 years, but they're very scared about 6 and 7 years because they're worried about looking bad if the batteries don't live up. CARB has said, even though the regulations say the car has to be on the road for a full year to get the credit, they've said that if the vehicle craps out halfway through the year, they'll still give them the full credit. So I think that is a sign of hope that maybe some of the manufacturers can put into place something like what Honda's done, going month to month, keeping some of their older vehicles on the road. The credit was intended for GM to bring EV1s back, but GM has shown very little sign. Actually, I should say no sign, no interest in bringing back EV1s. Now, never say never. I guess in some regards, I'm still a little bit of an optimist. So there might be a slim chance we could get some EV1s back out for a little longer. But there's a good chance we can get some Toyota RAV4s back.
I have a question regarding the EV1. Given that the federal government and the state government spent millions of dollars helping the auto industry develop batteries for EVs and to establish an infrastructure throughout the state of California for EVs, why can't we use that as leverage against GM and Toyota or anybody else? Since we have a vested public interest and dollars spent in this industry, why can't we tell them that you cannot trust these cars, that you have to put them back out on the road? Does that argument carry any weight?
We don't. At this point, we're at their mercy. I mean, we don't have a lot of power. Even though the PEVDC was granted intervention in the GM lawsuit, which is a major victory for us, CARB pretty much dismantled the regulations to the point that the lawsuits meant nothing. So they dropped the lawsuits, which was no big surprise. Everyone's pretty much admitted that batteries were a failure at this point. And so we are working from a very low bargaining position at this point. That is a major point in our letter from the legislature, because the state of California has spent a lot of money investing in the CARB zero-emission vehicle program. From all the infrastructure, all the signage on the freeways, all the incentive monies from the first $5,000 buy-down through the $9,000 Lowenthal grants to the current ZIP2 $5,000 buy-down money, of course, access into the carpool lanes. There's been a number of things that the California legislature has helped get through to help the ZEV program, and this is one of the paragraphs in the letter saying, look at all we've done. We take this very seriously. We wanted to see the number of vehicles on the road growing, not diminishing. Can you bring back some of these older vehicles, and how can we help? So we'll see how that goes.
And which legislators are writing these letters?
Kuehl, Pavley, there are one or two others that have shown interest. And by all means, if you are in touch with your representative in Sacramento and can get them to sign on, we'll, you know, course, be circulating this letter, you know, for signatures through the legislature.
And
mentioned that PSEV, in the short term, cleans the air. Does it get tested every 2 years to the PSEV standard once the car is sold? And after the 10-year warranty period, what kind of emissions can you expect out of what had been a PSEV engine?
I'm not sure how the smog check rules will be applied to PSEVs, but part of the PSEV requirement is that it lasts, the emissions control systems last for 150,000 miles, and that it be monitored onboard the vehicle with an OBD2 onboard diagnostic system. So technically, they should be able to plug in a scan tool, 100,000 miles into the operation and tell that it is actually still meeting the performance requirements. But I don't know the exact details of that. And of course, that's not to say that at 151,000 miles, it could just crap out. Every gasoline car eventually becomes a gross polluter, and that we all know. But they're banking, here in the short run, that getting hundreds of thousands of these vehicles out on the road will have more of an impact than we could possibly grow the ZEV market. Because, as we've seen, the public has been slow to accept vehicles. The automakers have been unwilling to put in the amount of money to promote the technology. So, of course, the public is fairly ignorant. And it's based on my experience so far, I think it would take a while to build up to the volumes that the automakers really want to see to build, economical electric vehicles. That's, of course, their story. But these PSEVs, on the other hand, only cost $200 more than a normal car. They are dramatically cleaner than a normal car. And by getting hundreds of thousands of these out, they can have more of an impact here before their 2010 deadline with the federal government. How about this?
In terms of infrastructure, I use the LA airport a lot, and I'm always like, well, okay, there's going to be no charging. Has there been any rumors that they're going to take it out? Because
Jeff Church is probably the guy to ask about that. He's been on top of that from day one, and he's been a really strong supporter of keeping that infrastructure in at the airport. From what I've heard, LAX is committed to keeping the chargers in place. The fact that they've upgraded all those chargers to small paddle, I think, is very encouraging. I think that LAX is safe. We probably need to worry about some of the other sites around Costco, and LAX seem about the only safe places we have right now for the small paddle RAV4 chargers. There are a lot of places that still need to be swapped out, and that's something that, unfortunately, I think we, the drivers, are going to have to work on.
One more on that front break. Once you get out of central L.A., there's very few small paddles. I discovered this.
Yeah.
There is not a small paddle in Riverside County, period.
Yeah, a lot of these, Costco probably has, right?
No, not Riverside.
Really?
One of the issues I know is there's supposed to be money funding to upgrade a fair number of charges like this by HMB, and I understand it hasn't been released yet.
I know that the folks up north have had really good success with this. Tom Dowling and some of the people in the northern EV ones and RAV clubs have been able to get local money. And I don't know if any of it's federal money, but at least local or state money to put in infrastructure, which amazes me that they're able to do this at this point in the game. But I don't know the status of money in Southern California for those kinds of upgrades. And we had talked at some point as drivers about helping to upgrade some of these chargers, or at least spread some of them around, places that have too small and too large, trying to do a swap or something like that. And I actually brought this up with Ed Fitzgerald at Costco and through Jeff Church, some of the people at LAX, but haven't had much luck. Of course, if you've paid all the money to install a small paddle charger, you're unwilling to see that go to someplace, even though it would be a really nice example to have. I think the Getty Center is still small. There's a lot of...
No, the Getty doesn't have small.
Yeah, the Getty's still large, I'm sorry. Still large. There are a lot of places around here that still have the large paddle chargers.
I missed that part. How are we dealing with places like... I've called this the Central City Mall and the Santa
Ralph's.
Monica Mall. I've gone to visit them at their office to see if they'll switch from my EV1 to my RAV4.
Right.
So is that a concerted effort that somebody's coordinating?
I think it's going to fall on us.
What's the cost per unit to do that for the unit itself?
The towel charger itself, I think, is about $2,500. And the cost of the swap out is not that great because the wiring is already there for the large paddle. In some cases, some of the older Gen 1 large paddle chargers don't have a ground and a neutral. and then that might need to pull another wire for the PAL to meet code.
Do we have a list of the places that need that most dramatically to switch over? Like, I still charge my EV in a few places where I can't charge my RAV, and so as I'm losing my EV, I'm now bugging those places to switch over.
Like Ralph, but,
Century City Mall in particular, right. And the Santa Monica place.
We still know of many places that have large paddle inductive chargers in place that are good for the ED1, but useless for the RAV4s that we have. We're trying to figure out, is there money available to swap out some of the large paddle chargers for small paddle chargers that we can use? Because increasingly now, by the end of this year, probably early next year, we'll get to the point where these chargers at Ralph's, at the Getty Center, at the Promenade, at various places, are completely useless. I mean, completely useless.
And I think it'd be a great benefit for us if we were able to tell them or show them how to get the units, because they're kind of clueless. So since maybe you or somebody has data, if we could just say, here are the units, this is the price, we'll pick it up and deliver it for you.
Right.
You know, otherwise people aren't going to be driving their RAV4s to the mall or to the Santa Monica place.
Right. We need to talk to the installers like Clean Fuel Connection, see if we can set up a special deal. If we can get a hold of the chargers, what would it cost to do the swap out? Because I've heard that we can do that fairly cheaply, maybe $500 or less.
I had mine done. It takes an hour. You know, I think all these Clean Fuel Connections are charging a fortune for it, and that's just, I think, inappropriate. There's got to be a better way to do it. It takes an electrician an hour to do it.
Does anybody here know how many small paddle chargers are actually available?
Where?
Does Gloria or David know? For example, if we wanted to buy another 20 small paddle chargers from Japan or wherever they're made.
That was my thought, and I know you were saying companies that are willing, the chargers. The problem is the supply.
Okay.
Trying to get the chargers out of here that the people want, because there is a large demand.
But with people losing their RAV4s and having called back, what happens to their charging unit at their houses?
You mean the EV1?
No, like the RAVs, people who are losing their RAVs, because I see...
Of the RAVs, all the RAVs for consumers were in 2002, so they've still got at least till 2005 until some of those start coming off the road. There were some small paddle fleet vehicles leased in 2001. I don't know how many were leased, but even those leases won't be due until sometime at the end of 2004. And all the RAVs before that were large paddle or conductive.
But if we as a group of electric owners or drivers can't facilitate a mall that knows nothing about it, if we can't facilitate them being able to swap it over, we're kind of in trouble. So somehow or another, we should figure out, maybe put out the word, where are the units?
Well, that
is any in a city, or where are they if you have to order them? How long does it take to get there?
We need to talk then with Ina Jaffe over at Clean Fuel Connection, find out how many small paddle chargers they can even get a hold of, how much they'll cost. Maybe we can talk to Toyota. Maybe we can work out some sort of deal to take the last, you know, 20 or 30 chargers, 50 chargers. I don't know how many they have or how many we can get, you know, at a decent price, and then see if there's any local money available to help pay for this. Find out maybe more about how Tom Dowling and the folks up in Northern California have been able to get funds for this and put that towards changing out some of these chargers. And if it comes down to it, I think many of the drivers would be willing to pitch in some money to get their, you know, their favorite charging space, you know, swapped out, you know, a place that you might visit a lot.
Is there someone here today that
could take Zan.
Yeah, besides me. On the chargers? Finding charger. Answering all those questions, that is going to take some pain to have.
Gloria will do that.
Okay, that'd be great. Yeah, Gloria, if you can talk with Ina, then I guess we'll find out. And then we can contact Tom Dowling and find out maybe how they were able to get some of their money.
Is there a regular maintenance schedule for all these different chargers? Because I've been, for instance, Costco, and these multiple chargers did not work. And I went in to talk to them, and of course, they were clueless. Cool. They knew nothing about it. Didn't know that it didn't work, and furthermore, didn't care.
You know, this is a problem the state's actually trying to deal with now. It's a very big problem, because back in the good old days, when we had problems with the Gen 1 charger, you'd call Clean Fuel Connection. They would send someone out to swap it out, and GM would pick up the bill. No problem. No question about that. GM's not very helpful these days. And so a question that CARB's been concerned with, their infrastructure group, has been how do we maintain the infrastructure that's out there. Of course, Clean Fuel Connection is interested because it's a possible source of income for them. But they're ultimately the ones that are tasked with keeping these things up and running.
Can I make a little suggestion? I mean, because I get, I'm sure we all do a bunch of RAB emails on a regular basis. Is there a way to have just a special subsection of our email list to deal with power charging stations? So if one of us sees a unit down, we can go online and let each other know about it?
The two best sources for that now, and this has always been the case, has been things that have been set up by the drivers themselves. In previous times, CARB or others have set up money to put in a charging website, which was fancy, didn't have the correct content, and then ultimately failed 6 or 12 months later when the money ran out. The only really good charging websites we have are the EV1 Club website, which is maintained by the drivers, and Tom Dowling's EV Charger News, maintained by the drivers. And I believe EV Charger News, you can send Tom an email, you know, with information about down charger sites, and he will update that in the webpage. And Clean Fuel Connection, CalStart has a website called
Clean Car Maps.
And every now and then I see this guy, Lior, whatever, from CalStart at some of the car meetings talking about how they need more money. But you get views about this, get access to the same information. But
it's sort of
live. But really, you know, ethanol stations doesn't help me.
Another thing as far as the point of down charger, there's an 800 number. I don't have it on me right now. It's plugged in my own cell phone already. Get out. But I found in the last, I'm curious how long it's going to last, but I find you call that 800 number, that charger is going to be fixed within about 3 or 4 days. Clean Fuel Connection, good. That's a good job.
It's usually
whatever
it's
money
usually,
they have now.
It goes to Clean Fuel Connection.
The best thing to do is just call, rather than report them being down, it'll stay down until forever. And we'll just keep seeing that list get smaller and smaller. If you see that thing there, what I do is right there on the spot, I call it up there. Usually it's 8 o'clock at night or something like that. And you just read the serial number on the side of the charger, tell them where it is. And
there was a campaign with EV1 Club several years ago to put stickers on the side of the charger with some of that information. I don't know if many of the towels do not have that information sticker on them.
A lot of the magna chargers still have the old stickers on it.
Oh, really?
If you call that number, you actually go to the
Okay.
They will get the message.
Well, maybe we should look into getting that number actually posted on.
I'll post it on the EV1 website. I don't want to put it on the back form.
But we should see about making some stickers and actually putting them on the chargers themselves. But then again, it's unclear if you call Clean Car or Clean Fuel Connection whether they forward the information to Tom Dowling so that he can update the website. It's hard to get all the parties, you know, ideally we'd like Clean Fuel Connection, Clean Car Maps, and EV Charger News all getting instant access to the same data, but so far all efforts to share that information have not worked well. The EV1 Club? The website? Oh, EV1-club or the power.net, something like that.
Google.
It's not org. Yeah, no, it's not that. It's not www. It's EV1-club.power.net. And in the upper left-hand corner, there's a little inductive charger, you know, sign there. And when you go into the database, they've got a map, which we went out and were scouting GPS locations of chargers with GPS coordinates and everything. There's a nice map on there, list of chargers, list of how many large and how many small paddle chargers at your site.
Sorry, for everybody, the easy way to get there, go to www.evchargernews.com, and that'll take you straight to Tom Dowling's site. And I think there's a link to EV1.
Right, and they both share the same information. Dave Kadama down here has been maintaining the EV1 Club list. But he works with Tom Dowling up in Northern California, and they share pretty much all the information.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, if people can't find it, there are links on EV1.com. It's about the EV1 Club map, and it's
would somebody mind when we finish circulating all these sites in one email, so they have them in one email?
Yeah, I think you go to, I don't know if you can get the EV Charger News from the EV1 Club, but I know you can get to the other way. And of course, if you go to Clean Car Maps, you can't get to either.
So what we'd like to talk about briefly are a couple of issues regarding the RAV4, because a lot of us here have RAV4s. Does anybody here, can you speak to the Palm Pilot that Michael Flubby, you helped with that,
I wrote the software.
You wrote the software.
Cool.
We'd like to briefly speak to that before Palm comes up.
Okay.
Specifically, the practical side of it, like how to charge your car, so you get maximum charge. Those who are not wonks, just to kind of make it more user friendly.
We took the interface that Michael Swabe designed for the EV1 and enhanced it to work with the RAV4. I wrote a little Palm application that we call RAV4 Info. It'll show you your actual true state of charge that the vehicle's reporting. True speed, amps, volts, all this other stuff. I find the most useful thing on it is just the state of charge and watching the watt-hour meter. I've been able on my battery pack to go at least 2,000 watt-hours below absolute zero. This is a lot of RAV4 drivers don't realize this, but you can take your car a lot farther than you might think. A lot of people freak out when the little charge icon turns on or when it starts blinking. Usually, the icon turns on when you've got about 23% left, and it starts blinking when you've got about 16 or 17% left. But even when you've got 0% left, I found I could still go another 6 to 10 miles at least. Bill Kortoff, who's not here, he's gone even farther than that. The trick is, when even without RAV4 info, you can tell when you're at absolute zero because the needle is actually so far down on the E for empty that you can see the letter E on both sides of the needle. It's actually covering the E. That's zero. And when you get there, you've only got another 10 or 15 miles left. So, I don't know, 5 or 10 miles. It depends. Basically, watch your voltmeter. As long as the voltmeter stays in the green and you're very gentle on the accelerator, you can go a long way.
How is the power at, the 5 miles? Are you going?
When you get down to the absolute zero, I've still found that I can do a full-on acceleration without any yellow effect. But as you go farther below zero, you'll find that the little voltmeter dips down if you do a hard acceleration. And if it dips down into the yellow, the turtle will come on the screen, and that'll temporarily cut your power. But your power will come back as soon as the needle comes back up into the green again. So as long as batteries, when they're very well discharged, the voltage sags very easily when you pull a lot of power out of it. And to get the power, you have to pull even more current out of the battery because we're at a lower voltage. So when you get down, when you're well into the flashing icon, it's probably a good idea just to be gentle on the car.
Are there any other questions for Rex?
You had a question about charging. One thing I've noticed on the RAV4, this is also true on the EV1, much more severe on the EV1, is when you get to a fully charged nickel metal battery, it likes to heat up. On the EV1, it would turn on the air conditioner for a couple hours to try and cool it back down again. The RAV doesn't necessarily do that. It'll run the fans in the back of the car to cool the battery as long as it's charging, but as soon as it stops charging, it shuts down. And I haven't seen the fans come back on. The battery will heat up to about 120 degrees and then eventually cool back down again. And if you're doing this every single night, this chemistry is very resilient. It's better than the Ovonix chemistry used on the EV1. But you own these, for many of you who own these battery packs or maybe buying these cars at the end of your lease, it's not something I want to play around with. So, and I've had my EV1 pack burned. I've baked my EV1 pack to the point where the range dropped down dramatically and the internal resistance of the battery pack increased dramatically. What happens when the batteries get burned like that is the resistance of the battery increases to the point that just driving the car normally heats up the battery. And you get into this positive feedback situation where just driving it is making things worse. So to avoid that, I want to keep my RAV batteries in as good a condition as I can, as long as I can. And to do that, the other thing I watch on the RAV4 Info is the temperature. And I drive differently if it's getting hot. For example, if I've been driving hard and I get home and it's cold at night, I'll plug in and charge right then and there, because when you plug in the charger, you bring on the fan. the fans will do a lot more help than the actual charging will hurt. The main thing I do is I try to set the timer on the charger or on the vehicle so that it starts charging in a way that it'll finish charging at the time I'm about to leave. Because what you don't want is for it to get to 100% full and then sit there for 6 hours. Because it'll heat up to 120 degrees or so. And whether how much stress that is on the batteries, I'm not exactly sure. On the EV1, it was really bad. On the RAV, they say it's not a big deal. And chances are a lot of the Edison vehicles that have gone 100,000 miles, you know, were probably charged starting at, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock at night and sat at 120 degrees for a few hours. They're still going strong. So maybe there's nothing to worry about here. But for me personally, I try and time it so that it finishes charging at the time I leave. If I know it's going to be sitting, I pull the paddle out at around 80 or 90%. Because when it's sitting at 90%, you're in no trouble. It's only when it's full.
I want to thank Greg for taking the time here and giving us this information.
Actually, before we get into the lifting discussion, which is fascinating, I wish I had time to hang around and do this myself. I've got to go catch a plane in about 10, 20 minutes. Bobby Cooper, yeah. I was wondering if I could just leave with a few parting notes before I'm sure we'll spend a lot of time with the Lithium T0 because it really is a fascinating car. Should be congratulated on winning the recent Michelin Challenge of Vendor, which I entered with a General Motors EV1 2 years ago and came in second place. But it really is quite a feat because it blew away all the fuel cell vehicles, which is which actually brings me to one little thing I want to kind of implant in your head. CARB has the system for really fostering fuel cell vehicles, but they can't necessarily require a fuel cell in a vehicle. And so the wording of the regulation says that these fuel cell vehicles are going to get 40 credits, and we're going to require you to build, you know, several of if you take this option, are defined as a zero-emission vehicle that goes 100 miles range and can get 95% of its energy back in 10 minutes. Now, it says nothing about hydrogen. It says nothing about fuel cell. That's their definition of a fuel cell vehicle. Okay? Now, imagine their definition of a 40-credit vehicle. Imagine a T0 that goes 300 miles on lithium batteries. Say we tweak that in software, so it only goes 100 miles. It's a 100-mile range vehicle. Now you have to put 95% of that energy back in 10 minutes. Well, you know, after the test, you click a switch and it comes back, you know. But for the test, for the certification, it's a 100-mile range vehicle. Not 105, 100. You have to expand the charging system right now. It's a 20-kilowatt charging system with a reductive charging. We probably need 70, 80, maybe 90 kilowatts. But it's certainly something that is technically feasible. As a matter of fact, Chrysler had 60-kilowatt Epic minivans running with the AeroVironment chargers, and they had a prototype 120-kilowatt charger in the work that I don't think was ever actually delivered to Daimler Chrysler. So it's something that's possible. And it's a loophole in the CARB regulations. Lord knows the automakers have been taking advantage of loopholes long enough. This is something that I think the EV people could actually take advantage of and really just throw a pie in the face of the fuel cell vehicles and CARB in general. The regulations aren't totally final yet, so I didn't want to make too much noise about this. But I guess I am here. So just something to think about. And the second thing, before I leave, Zan asked me a very important question. She said, you know, what is the one thing that we here as individuals can do to help EVs? And that's one of the reasons we're all here today, right? And that breaks down into really two parts. One is, what do we do to keep some of the older vehicles on the road as long as possible? And that lies mostly in this new CARB credit, which means talking with your automotive company, Toyota, GM, whoever, try and get inside the ladder as you can to say, you know, hey, these credits are there. You don't have to leave the vehicle on the road for a full year. You don't have to offer a warranty. Just let me keep driving it. I know we've been doing this, and with GM, we've been hitting a brick wall, but keep trying. Also, work with your state representative to get on board to get this letter signed that we're going to send to all six major OEMs asking that they take advantage of the credit and, you know, what can we do to help. Those would be the main things that we can do to keep older vehicles on the road. For newer vehicles, we don't expect to see any new vehicles from any OEMs for quite a while. Certainly, as we look out in the next...
Watch your language.
Yeah. No, I mean, from the big six, we don't expect to see production electric vehicles, production EVs, EVs, I should just say, the PEVC was formed with the idea that we wanted to see EVs that were professionally built in volume production from major manufacturers, as compared to converted vehicles in the sense of something that some guy does in his garage. Now, it's something that is built in volumes of like 20, 30, 50, you know, Scion XBs by AC Propulsion is, I don't know where you place that. Somewhere in between. It is a production vehicle. And it's that's what I'm getting at here. we've pretty much played our last card with the OEMs. We're not going to see any production EVs built by the six major OEMs in any time that we can see in the future. As you look farther down the line, you might say, well, eventually when fuel cells don't deliver, if that actually happens, they might be forced to come back and take a look at batteries, but that's going to be a ways away. CARB's going to have a review in 2006 to look at fuel cell and battery technology to decide what they're going to do about 2009, which is when the regulations are supposed to kick in for the next level, the next, you know, second year, the bigger volume.
Next recall.
Yeah. So on the second level, I think the only thing that we can really do right now is to promote this technology, to get the newest technology on the road, as many vehicles as we can, and that's AC Propulsion, that's lithium battery technology. It's other manufacturers too. Who knows if Ron Hutt is going to be able to revive Corbin. He says he can. There's Phoenix. I don't know if they're here today or not.
They're here.
So we have, you know, several manufacturers, you know, that I believe as a community now, we're at the bottom of the, we're on the last straw here. We kind of need to work together, solve some of these problems, and to get these vehicles on the road. If batteries can be produced by someone in volume, battery packs, battery module that can be shared by all, or technology that can be purchased, you know, from a manufacturer for others to share. Anything that can be done, and we all kind of need to put our heads together to talk about or to think about how can we help AC Propulsion, how can we help Phoenix, how can we help Corbin or what's left of it, or you know, any of these guys to really get vehicles that highlight this dramatic new technology on the road so that when 2006 rolls around, we'll have the technology on the road, we will have proven it, and just if we can keep pace with the fuel cell development. They're hoping to get 100 or 200 fuel cells on the road by the end of 2008. If we could have 100 or 200 of these high-tech lithium battery cars in that same time frame and show that we can do these EVs, we can do these zero-emission vehicles cheaper than the fuel cell with much easier infrastructure, then I think we might have something to bargain with. Who will get to listen to us? I don't know. But certainly CARB is setting up a workshop in 2006 to look at all the technology.
So, enough people start buying
EVs. You can show a real market.
I'm pretty much lost patience with the CARB automaker battle. The car companies do listen to the market.
Yeah.
Can you put an example letter out with the
CARB
language that you can send to our representative? That would make it a lot easier. If you modify the rules,
I can bring out the bullet points, I guess.
Great.
I wouldn't want to actually copy the same letter, but...
bullet points.
Yeah, I mean, we in the state of California put a lot of money into infrastructure.
done so far. Charge off is a straight up credit. We'd like to take advantage of it. Okay, yeah, email me separately.
Thank you.
Thank you.